7, Stan Phillips.
Mansions of glory and suicide machines sprung from cages on highway nine, torn with human ticket and stepping out over the line.
Hey, happy Monday, fans of the Metropolitans. It's a good Monday, isn't it? It's a five for fiver. Yes, the Mets have played five series and have now won all five. And when you laid out the groundwork for the beginning of the season, you couldn't have come up with a much better plan and execution than what the Mets have done so far. Yes, the Mets won the rubber game in a match against the Diamondbacks yesterday, and it's always, no matter who the team is, it's good to win a series on the road. And our good friend Tyler McGill, who keeps impressing every time out, was solid from start to finish. He allowed a solo homer in the fourth to Christian Walker. Now let's face it, facts. Face the facts here, kids. That ball was a moonshot. I mean, woo. Just goes to show you make one bad pitch, these major league power hitters can crush it. But that was basically the only blemish on McGill's record yesterday. He did run out of gas a bit in the seventh inning. I guess that's to be expected a little bit. And he allowed two-out hits, one of them cutting the Mets lead to 4-2. After Nick Ahmad's RBI single, McGill left the game to a standing ovation from the Met fans in Arizona. And I was watching the game on TV, and it sure seemed like there were a lot of Met fans out there. And that was after 6.2 innings of 5-hit, 1-walk, 7-strikeout ball. Now, Seth Lugo came in and got Pevin Smith the flyout. With 2 earned runs allowed on Sunday, McGill's ERA dropped to 2.35. So he has been a pleasant surprise. And if he keeps pitching like this and the other starters do well, we're in no rush to get Jacob deGrom back. Of course, we want Jake back in the rotation, but the urgency isn't there right now. And the Mets, who have been hitting big almost all year, wasted no time getting on the board as Mark Canha led off the game with an infield single and reached second on an error. Two batters later, probably the team's offensive MVP of the season so far, Francisco Lindor drove him in with a single up the middle. Now, the offense was quiet for a while after that, though, as they just had two more base runners until the sixth inning. Starling Marte wanted that to change. After he doubled one out, he stole third, and catcher Jose Herrera's throw went into the outfield. Marte jogged home to get the Mets a 2-1 lead. Now, in the seventh inning, the Mets started another rally, loading the bases with one out. Travis Jankowski walked on 4 pitches to make it a 3-1 game. That's the way you want to get an RBI. Let the pitcher give it to you. And two batters later, Marte was hit by a pitch to bring in the Mets' fourth run of the game. Another great option, get hit by a pitch to get an RBI. Now, the Mets wanted that run from the seventh inning back, though, and got it with a 2-out rally. J.D. Davis went oppo for a solo shot to give New York a 5-2 lead. Reminded me of like an Aaron Judge shot. He hit it so hard into the opposite field, it was nice to see. And after Louis Guillorme double, James McCann hit a grounder that went off the glove of third baseman Sergio Alcantara and into the outfield, letting Guillorme score easily to make it 6-2. Rough field out in the day for Sergio Alcantara. Lugo stayed in the game for the eighth inning and allowed just 1 hit and 1.1 scoreless innings. It was his third straight scoreless outing after allowing 2 runs in 2 of his 3 previous appearances. Now Joey Rodriguez entered the game in ninth and struck out 2-3 batters he faced, clinching the victory for New York. So that was nice to see. Again, I'm not convinced on Joey, but maybe this is one of those years it all comes together for him, hopefully. Now, as the Mets' 5th straight series win opened up the season, as I mentioned before, and that's something they haven't done since 2018. So, Met fans, we are experiencing one heck of a start. Now, in addition to the game, there were some updates on Jacob deGrom and Taijuan Walker, courtesy of our fearless leader, Buck Showalter. Showalter gave reporters updates and said that Walker will return to the rotation this weekend when the Phillies come into town, and he will throw a sim game on Monday. As for deGrom, if the original plan was for him to have an MRI on Friday, he instead got a CAT scan and will have the MRI on Monday. Showalter said that no one has read the CAT scan results yet, but there was no urgency, nor are there red flags thus far. So far, so good as far as Jake and Taijuan are concerned. Now, if you don't mind, I'd like to get back to Jacob deGrom. Today is the big day, the big MRI exam.
And we should be getting more clarity about a possible return to the Mets after he receives an MRI exam on Monday. Now, Showalter did on Sunday indicate he misspoke a day early when he said DeGrom underwent an MRI exam and CAT scan on Friday. He did have the latter test, the CAT scan, but not the MRI. The Mets are hopeful DeGrom will be cleared to begin throwing. He's been sidelined since spring training with a stress reaction on his right scapula. Showalter said DeGrom's CAT scan results still hadn't been evaluated by doctors. If there was a sense of urgency about the reading, would obviously push it a little bit, but it's not going to change anything. If DeGrom is cleared to begin throwing, he would need a full build-up, and that would likely take him until at least May before he could be considered for the Mets rotation. DeGrom pitched twice in spring training, but last appeared in a regular season game on July 7th of last year. He missed the entire second half with forearm elbow issues. Now, Taijuan Walker will throw a simulator game in St. Louis on Monday, and team officials are still deciding between Friday and Saturday, although I heard from more sources that Saturday's the probable day. Now, Tyler McGill could be an option for Friday on normal rest, depending upon how he feels coming off Sunday's 6-2 win over Diamondbacks, in which he allowed 2 runs on 5 hits over 6 2/3 innings while striking out 7. Walker left his start against the Phillies on April 11th with shoulder discomfort that was diagnosed as bursitis. Now, Adonis Medina was optioned to AAA Syracuse after pitching a scoreless 8th inning on Saturday. The Mets called Yoan Lopez to fill a spot in the bullpen. Medina will stretch out as a AAA starter. And he's getting some attention, so we may see Adonis Medina as a future Met before we know it. And the good news is bench coach Glenn Sherlock is scheduled to rejoin the Mets in St. Louis after spending the last 1.5 weeks sidelined with COVID. Dick Scott had served as the bench coach in Sherlock's absence. Now, Sean Reed Foley avoided the injury list the day after he exited with leg cramping. Showalter said IV fluids were administered and Reed Foley was feeling better. Now, our good buddy Matt Reynolds has been with us a few times over the years, was claimed off waivers by the Reds. The infielder was designated for assignment by the Mets last week. Now it's time to celebrate some Met birthdays and transaction on this day in Met history, April 25th. Happy birthday to Bob Johnson, born in 1943. Happy birthday to Tony Phillips, born this day in 1959. Happy birthday to Blaine Beatty, born this day in 1964. Happy birthday to Brad Quantz, born this day in 1971. And happy birthday to Trevor Williams, born this day in 1992. On the transaction front on this date in 2012, the Mets signed free agent Fred Willis. And on this date in 2012, the Mets also signed free agent Brett Imhaus on this date. Now let's talk about the greatest baseball group there is on Facebook when it comes to your beloved New York Metropolitans, New York Mets baseball way of life. If you're not a member, please do join if you're on Facebook. We have the greatest members, the greatest content, greatest discussions, you name it. If you're a Met fan, you need to be there. And if you're listening to this podcast and haven't subscribed, you need to subscribe. You're notified every time one is uploaded daily. And you can just hop on in and start listening. So please do subscribe. And if you ever need to reach out to me, and some of you have, and I appreciate all the comments, positive, negative, any suggestions, anything you might want to hear, please do so and send me an email at philstan41@gmail.com. Now, as we always do, it's time for our Met Jeopardy and Trivia question of the day. And I have one question for you. Who is ready for that? Raise your hands. Okay, good to see my peeps are ready. Now, let's do it, shall we? What do you want to do first? Do you want to do the trivia or do you want to do the Jeopardy? Okay, the consensus rules here, and it looks like you guys want to do the Jeopardy. So we're going to give you today's Jeopardy question. And the two clues for Jeopardy today. On May 1st, 2011, the game against the Philadelphia Phillies, he went 5-for-7 and hit the game-winning RBI in the 14th inning in his first game with the Mets. On June 8th, he hit his first home run with the Mets, a three-run homer off of the Milwaukee Brewers' Cameron Lowe. And today's trivia question, who is ready? Who was the only Met to ever hit a home run in an All-Star game? We'll be back at the end of the podcast to tell you who are the correct answers to both. Now let's talk about some of the things we're talking about in the greatest group there is in Facebook. On this date in 1963, we mentioned that in the second year of existence, the Mets win a game on a Thursday for the first time in franchise history when they beat the Cubs at Wrigley Field 3-2. During their inaugural season, the expansion team failed to register a victory in the 15 games played on the fifth day of the week. Then we noted that on this date in 1984, in a 2-1 victory over Montreal at Olympic Stadium, Mets right-hander Dwight Gooden becomes the first teenager to strike out 10 batters in a major league game since Burt Blyleven accomplished a feat with the Twins in 1970. The 19-year-old rookie phenom will lead the National League with 276 strikeouts that year. Then we also celebrated the day Tom Seaver fanned a record 19 batters and struck out 10 in a row against the Padres. Then we noted that on this date in 2012, David Wright became the Mets' all-time RBI leader with 735 runs batted in when he hit a two-run homer in the team's 5-1 victory over the Marlins at Citi Field. The 29-year-old third baseman passes Darryl Strawberry's franchise mark with his sixth-inning blast off Mark Burley. And then here's the one that always amuses me. On this date in 1962, catcher Harry Cheedy is traded for himself when the Cleveland Indians send him to the New York Mets in exchange for a player to be named later. Who was that player? Well, on June 15th, the Mets will sell Cheedy back to Cleveland to complete the deal. Only in Met history, right? Go figure. And as always, we have great contributions from everybody in the group on a daily basis. I can't thank these guys enough. Mike Fried, always spot on with his commentary. He did a good analysis about Mets complaining about the team for no reason. And there's always an excuse for them to complain. Is it Rojas when he was manager? Wally Backman? You got to check out what Mike has to say. Really good stuff in the group. And Tony James noted that we've won our first five series of the year, as I mentioned earlier in a podcast. Don't get much better than that. And then on this date in 2010, Mike Pelfrey threw a rain-shortened five-inning shutout as the Mets complete a series sweep of the Braves 1-0 at Citi Field. Now, Pelfrey was in trouble all five innings, but manages to escape unscathed in extending his string of 24 scoreless innings. It's actually Raul Valdez who was on the mound for New York when the game is stopped in the top of the sixth, but everything after the fifth is wiped out, giving Pelfrey credit for a complete game. The game's lone run came when Jose Reyes runs wild in spite of the sloppy conditions, stealing second after a two-out boop single in the first, and coming to score on Jason Bay's infield single when third baseman Chipper Jones' throw skips away from first baseman Troy Glaus just enough to allow Reyes to scamper home. And again, Mike Fried, more analysis on Tyler McGill, talking about how great he pitched, the good hitting, the good base running. And he gives hats off to Buck Showalter, who says Mike says Buck knows what he's doing. I can't agree more. From Lindor to Davis to Marte, just a great lineup, and everyone contributes. And he mentioned, and I want to take note of this, on a sad day, it was a rough day for Fire Department New York brothers and sisters when the three-alarm fire in the confines of 69th Precinct in Canarsie had 8 injuries, one of the 8 not surviving, 2 civilians and 6 firefighters. Out of the 6 firefighters, 1 did not make it. Thoughts to our brother Timothy Klein from the Fire Department of New York, condolences to his family. You never want to hear something like this, and like Mike said, we're with you, and may he rest in peace. So always a sad day, and my hat's off to all firefighters. They do a job which basically is self-sacrificing as possible, and we do appreciate it. Now let's talk about Bob Johnson, former Met. Did you know that Bob Johnson was a member of the 69 Mets? Yes, he pitched two games, 1.2 innings. So he's one of those guys that could say he was a member of the 69 Mets. Of course, he wasn't with them at the end of the year. But Mike Bob Johnson was a New York Met in 69. Now, how come he wasn't with the Mets after 69? Well, he was traded by the Mets with Amos Otis for that infamous trade for Joe Foy. But things got better for Bob Johnson. Yes, they did. He was a member of the 71 World Series Pirates, World Series Championship Pirates, I should say. 71 season, he was also his most productive, finishing 9-10 with 3.45 ERA, including 27 starts, 7 complete games, and 1 shutout. The Mets faced the Giants in the NL Championship Series that year with a 5-game series lead tied 1-1 after 2 games. Johnson started Game 3. He outdueled Juan Marichal at Three River Stadium, pitching 8 innings, allowing only 1 earned run for the win. Now, the Pirates went on to win Game 4 to reach the World Series for the first time in 11 years. Johnson did not fare as well in the World Series, losing Game 2 at Memorial Stadium against the Baltimore Orioles. He was an alumnus of Bradley University, and for his career, he compiled a 20-34 record with a 3.48 ERA and 507 strikeouts, 183 appearances, including 76 starts, 18 complete games, 2 shutouts, 12 saves, and 692 and one-third innings pitched. He garnered 15 hits in 157 at-bats for an .096 batting average. Happy birthday, Bob Johnson. Now, how about we talk about Tony Phillips, shall we? Tony Phillips played with the Mets at the tail end of his career. He was on that pretty good 1998 team, as you recall. Now, how did we get Tony Phillips? He was traded by the Blue Jays to the Mets for Leo Estrella. And in 98 with the Mets, he appeared in 52 games with 229 at-bats. His average wasn't that good, .233, and his slugging percentage was only .330 for an OPS of .681. But Tony had a pretty good distinguishable career. He was an American professional baseball utility player who was one of the best, and he had an 18-year major league career. You're not too shabby if you last 18 years in the major leagues. He played regularly at second base, but had significant time as shortstop and third baseman. In addition, Phillips showed his versatility with over 100 game appearances in the outfield corners and as designated hitter. He could do it all. He also represented the U.S. in the Pan Am Games, and he was a world champion. Yes, he was a member of the world champion Oakland A's in 1989. So he had a pretty damn good career. He was traded from the Padres along with Kevin Bell and Eric Mustad to the A's for Bob Lacy and Roy Moretti. And he became the first member of the Oakland A's to hit for the cycle, going 5-for-5 against the Orioles on May 16, 1986. Phillips also tied American League records for most assists in a game, 12 on July 6, 1986 against the Brewers. In 1988, he had a poor year, hitting just .203 over 212 at-bats, and the Athletics lost to the Dodgers in the World Series, with Phillips striking out against Oral Hershiser to end that series. However, in 89, he boosted his average to .262, and the A's swept the Giants to win the World Series. Phillips made the last out of the 89 World Series when he fielded a ground ball off the bat of Brett Butler and then threw to Dennis Eckersley, covering first base to clinch the series. What a great feeling that must have been. Now, he left Oakland after 89 to join the Detroit Tigers. His offensive production surged with Detroit. He became proficient at drawing walks, leading the American League in 93 with 132 after posting 114 in 92. His 114 runs scored in 92 were a league best. And he followed that up with 113 runs scored in 93. In 93, he was recognized with a 16th place finish in MLB Most Valuable Player Award voting. Also, his 93 season was unique in that he became the first and so far only player to ever have 100 or more hits, walks, runs, and strikeouts in a season where the player hit less than 10 homers. After hitting 19 homers and drawing another 95 walks in 94, Phillips was traded to the California Angels for Chad Curtis in 1995, with the season yet to start due to the 94-95 Major League Baseball strike. He set a career best mark that year with 27 homers, but drove in just 61 runs due to batting leadoff and walked 113 times. In 1996, Phillips moved on to the Chicago White Sox, with whom he drew 125 walks, most in the league, and scored 119 runs for the second year in a row. Phillips returned to the Angels via trade with Chad Kruder for Jorge Fabregas and Chuck McElroy partway through the 97 season and drew 102 walks, his third year in a row and fifth year out of six with over 100. In 1998, he played with the Toronto Blue Jays, who, like I said, traded him to the Mets for Leo Estrella, and then he signed on with the A's for his final season in 1999. Now let's talk a little about Blaine Beatty. How did Blaine Beatty get his baseball career start? Well, he was a ninth round 1984 Major League Baseball draft pick by the Baltimore Orioles. He spent 12 seasons in the minors, compiling a 121-69 record with a 3.26 ERA. So he was a lifer in the minor leagues. He gutted it out for 12 seasons. And during the 87 season with the Hagerstown Suns, Beatty went 11-1 with 2.52 ERA in 13 starts. He completed four of his starts and allowed just 81 hits in 100 innings. In addition to having the highest winning percentage for the Carolina League that year, he was named the Carolina's Pitcher of the Year, Carolina League's Pitcher of the Year. Now, with the Mets, Beatty spent parts of two seasons, and he made seven major league appearances with the Mets between 89 and 91. He was injured in 1990. After returning to the minor leagues, he retired as a player after the 97 season. Now, he was a pitching coach in the Pirates system from 98 to 2002 and the Mets system from 2003 to 2005. He joined the Orioles organization in 2006. He spent the 2006 to 2008 season with Frederick Keyes as their pitching instructor. He was the pitching coach for the 2009 Delmarva Shoebirds, before returning to the Frederick Keyes for the 2010 through 2012 seasons. Beatty moved up to become the pitching coach for the Bowie Bay Sox for the 2013 and 2014 seasons. Blaine then returned to Delmarva for another stint as the Shorebirds pitching coach for the 2015 and 2016 seasons. Blaine was named the pitching coach for Frederick Keyes for 2017 and 2018 seasons. Now, who remembers Brad Klontz as a Met? Yes, he also was a 98 Met. Didn't pitch too much with us, though. Two games he just pitched, three innings pitched, with an ERA 9.00. But yes, Brad Klontz was a New York Met. It's amazing how many people are Mets that you just didn't remember being as a Met. Now, he was traded by the LA Dodgers with Hideo Nomo. He was part of the Hideo Nomo trade for Greg McMichael and Dave Malicki. And then at the end of the season, he was granted free agency. Now, what's so special about Brad Klontz? Well, in his career, he led the NL in games pitched in 96 with 81. And he was a member of the 1995 World Series Championship Braves. He pitched for the Braves, Dodgers, Mets, and Pirates. And if you remember, he was known for his distinctive sidearm submarine windup and delivery. He last played for the AAA affiliate of the Florida Marlins, the Albuquerque Isotopes, in 2006. Now let's talk about Trevor Williams, an active New York Met right now. He previously played for the Pirates and the Cubs. And after graduating from Rancho Bernardo High School, he played college ball at Arizona State University from 2011 and 2013. And was a pretty damn good pitcher with the Sun Devils. He started 38 games during his career, going 18-8 with a 2.98 ERA. 2012, he played collegiate summer ball with the Orleans Firebirds of the Cape Cod Baseball League. Now, Williams was drafted by the Marlins in the second round of the 2013 MLB draft. He made his professional debut with the Gulf Coast Marlins and also played for the Batavia Muck Dogs and Greensboro Grasshoppers that year. In 2012, between the three teams, he was 0-2 with a 2.38 ERA. Williams started 2014 with the Jupiter Hammerheads, earning Florida State League All-State All-Star honors, and was promoted to the Jacksonville Suns in August. In 26 games started between both clubs, he compiled an 8-7 record and a 3.13 ERA. 2015, Williams played for both Jacksonville and the New Orleans Zephyrs, pitching to a 7-10 record and a 3.85 ERA in 25 games, 24 starts. On October 24, 2015, the Marlins traded Williams to the Pirates for Richard Mitchell as compensation for the Marlins hiring Jim Benedict from the Pirates as their new VP of pitching development. That's one of those weird trades in baseball, isn't it, folks? He spent 2016 with the Indianapolis Indians, where he was 9-6 with a 2.53 ERA in 20 games. He was promoted to the major leagues for September call-ups in 2016. In 12 and two-thirds innings, he pitched for the Pirates and was 1-1 with a 7.82 ERA. Williams began 2017 with Pittsburgh as a member of their bullpen. As the season progressed, he was eventually moved into the starting rotation. In 31 games, 25 starts for the Pirates, he compiled a 7-9 record with a 4.07 ERA and a 1.31 WHIP. He began 2018 as a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates starting rotation. He posted a career year. He was really, really good. He finished an ERA of 3.11 in 31 starts, ending the season with a record of 14-10 in 170 and two-thirds innings. 2019, Williams, though, had a down year, posting a record of 7-9 and a 5.38 ERA, over 26 starts and 145 and two-thirds innings. In 2020, he was 2-8 with a 6.18 ERA, and he led the National League in home runs allowed with 15. November 20, 2020, Williams was designated for assignment. He elected free agency on November 28th. Now, on February 5th, 2021, Williams signed a one-year, $2.5 million contract with the Cubs. On May 31st, he was placed on the IL list after undergoing an emergency appendectomy. In 13 games with the Cubs, 12 starts, Williams went 4-2 with a 5.06 ERA across 58 and two-thirds innings. And then on July 30, 2021, a big trade in Met history, Williams was traded to the Mets, along with Javier Baez and cash considerations in exchange for Pete Crow Armstrong. So it looks like the Pete Crow Armstrong trade, we did get a couple months of Javier Baez, is for Trevor Williams, and I don't know if that's going to work out for us. Only time will tell. You never know with prospects. Now it's time to give out the answers for our Met Trivia and Jeopardy of the day. The trivia question was, which... Hold on 1 second, folks. Here it is. Who was the only Met to ever hit a home run in an All-Star game? Well, the correct answer is Lee Mazzilli. Congrats to our good buddy John Tierney on being the first to submit the correct answer. In today's Final Jeopardy, Mets Final Jeopardy, on May 1st, 2011, in a game against the Philadelphia Phillies, he went 5-7 and hit the game-winning RBI in the 14th inning in his first game with the Mets. On June 8th, he hit his first home run with the Mets, a three-run home run off the Milwaukee Brewers' Cameron Lee. What's the correct answer? Well, guess who got the correct answer? John Tierney again. He swept the board yesterday. And the correct answer is Ronnie Polino. Congrats to John Tierney on getting that one. Good job, John. All right, the Mets begin a three-game series against the Cardinals tonight. We'll be back to talk about it all day tomorrow. First game is tonight, 7:45. We got Max Scherzer going on the mound today. Should be a dandy. I'm looking forward to it. And he'll be going against Miles Michaelis, a very good pitcher himself, 1-0 with a 1.76 ERA. Max will be actually be going for his fourth win already this year. He's got the winning touch. He has an ERA of 2.50 and 23 Ks. So we'll be back to talk about tomorrow and all the other good Mets stuff as we always do. So please join us. Again, thank you for your support. It means the world to me, and we'll talk again tomorrow. Meet the Mets, step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your kiddies, bring your wife. Guaranteed to have the time of your life, because the Mets are really sucking the ball. Mets of New York.
Fiddler and the people on the streets. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! Oh, they're hollering, they're cheering, and they're jumping in their seats. Where do they go? To meet the Mets! All the fans are true to the orange and blue. So hurry up and come on down, 'cause we got ourselves a ball from the Mets of New York town. Step right up and greet the Mets. Bring your gear.